creating a VM, either on your machine or like working with one remotely. At least the stuff that I used to see years ago was, it was just funny to think that that could be spun up and executed and then torn down in a multi-threaded environment really, really fast. Like that was kind of cool to see. And it's this toolkit that really does it. These VMs are highly optimized.
Scraping Bits is brought to you by the following sponsors. MEV Protocol. Maximize your ETH staking value with MEV ETH. Exclusively on MEV.io. And Composable. Execute any intent on any chain, coming soon to Mantis.app. That's MANTIS.APP. And Fastlane Labs, the only MEV and intent-centric team that has a daily deodorant application rate of over 68%.
GM, everyone. My name is Degachi, the host of Scraping Bits. And today, I'm with Joe Caulfield, the runtime engineer at Anza. How's it going, GM?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Pretty good, sir. I'm glad to have you on. I'm excited for this. I want to learn more about this runtime and the SVM, so I'm sure a lot of people also want to hear. But just for the people that aren't familiar with you, who are you and what do you do?
Sure. So like you said, I'm Joe and I work at Anza, and I used to work at Solana Foundation for a while. So if, you know, if any of you guys listening ever like saw any of my content through DevRel, that's what I used to do. And then I joined Labs over the summer, and then we spun out to Anza a few months ago. I've been working on some of the runtime stuff for the last few months, but I've worked on a few other things too. Like I helped with Token 22 and our new Web3JS library. But you know, right now the runtime stuff has been sort of my focus, and been really into the SVM stuff myself, which is why I'm pumped to sort of come on here and talk about that and whatever people want to know.
Oh yeah. Let's talk about the runtime then. So what is the runtime? Give us a TLDR define so we know what we're talking about.
Okay, so TLDR, the runtime is basically everything that has to do with processing a transaction, and also a few different things that are involved with, like, I don't want to say consensus per se, but it's more so like cluster level things like rewards, things like managing sysbars, like stuff that the cluster needs to keep humming along. And so like the runtime on Solana, it operates on like a per slot basis, right? There's a series of things that need to happen every slot. And then there's also a series of things that need to happen every epoch. So the runtime is responsible for all that. And then there's some lower level components in the runtime that do a little bit more isolated work. So the runtime kind of does a lot. And the problem that we have now is it's sort of been this like giant bag of like a million things that need to get done as the network runs, when, you know, we can sort of start to break this up into different segregated roles. And that's actually been one of the goals, which is pretty cool. One of the goals behind SVM.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think, so since the runtime is really just the processing of a transaction, what does this pipeline look like? Let's say I'm a user, I'm submitting a transaction, or multiple, I guess, in Solana. What does this look like? What is this entire pipeline?
Okay, so if you strip away some of the other stuff that the runtime does right now, like, you know, tracking rewards and activating features and all that, this actual transaction pipeline is actually somewhat straightforward. It's a little complex, but it conceptually as a pipeline isn't that bad. So you get a series of transactions that come in to the validator, right? And for those of people who don't know, like Solana doesn't have a mempool. All the transactions are sort of forwarded based on the leader schedule. So you're trying to send your transactions to the leader, and if it can't get processed by the leader, it'll go to the next node, et cetera. So when the runtime is invoked on a node, it has the transactions it needs. So it processes them in batches. So you end up with this batch of transactions. It goes through a sig verify stage, and then it goes through a banking stage. And the banking is going to actually try to create a block with the transactions. And so when that happens, you basically go, like the node inside the runtime, what it will do is take this batch of transactions, bust it up into the instructions that are in each transaction, load all of the accounts required by the instructions, and then load the programs required by the instructions, provision a virtual machine for the programs, and then execute the program on those accounts and update the result in the accounts database, and then hash everything to the block.
And this is all part of the TPU, right? The transaction processing unit.
Yeah, so the TPU, yeah. So basically that's like the overarching mechanism of the validator. And that's why when you send transactions, you can send it over RPC or you can send it directly to TPU. But when you send it over RPC, I believe it gets forwarded to TPU. So, you know, all transactions will route that way, at least as far as I know.
And can you go through each part of this as well? So the SIG verify, that's just verifying that the person sending the transaction, what is it? I tried to retrieve it, but it just didn't work. So
yeah, so basically it's SIG verify, like just as you said, and as it kind of sounds, it's verifying the signatures on the transaction. So it's verifying that the correct number are present, the correct keys have been used to sign them. So like to give you an example, especially for those who don't know like how a Solana transaction is structured, like you have a list of instructions and in those instructions are accounts. And the way you list these accounts is the address and then you have two booleans, so signer and writable. And if its signer is set to true, then the private key of that address needs to have signed the transaction. And so for every single account key that's in a transaction with is signer marked as true, you know, the SIG verify stage is going to expect a signature to be applied to the transaction. And so what that looks like is you take the transaction, imagine the transaction as like a zipped folder, right? So like you have all of these instructions, you zip it up, and then you have to apply a signature to that like zipped bundle of instructions. And once you apply one signature, like you can't really change it because you need to apply more signatures. And if you change the transaction, then the one you applied previously is invalidated. So the point is like you have the transaction itself, which is actually called a message. And then you have all of the signatures, which are just hashed transaction messages with the different private keys. And so it will decompile the message and then it will do a verify step with your public key to make sure that you did in fact sign.
Okay. It's verifying that all the sign is legit and not basically fake.
Yeah. And if one of them's missing, then, you know, it's not going to let it through.
Yeah. It just reverts.
Yeah. Or if it's wrong. Yeah.
Then after the SIG verify stage, it moves on to the banking, which is where all the state changes, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's where blocks are produced.
Okay. And they're done in batches.
Yeah. The transactions are processed in batches. And that's where like the parallelization of the Solana virtual machine comes into play. So like one of the big like benefits and the reasons why Solana is so fast is because it can do this in parallel. So like I touched a little bit on how it loads accounts and then it loads programs. Well, basically what it will do is it will take a look at all of the accounts needed for some batch of transactions. And it'll take a look at all the programs needed and it'll sort of parallelize based on programs and accounts and which ones are being read and written to, right? So like the easiest way to envision this is sort of thinking like a thread pool, like for anyone who's a programmer and has worked with thread pools, it's like read, write locks. That's basically all it is, you know? And it's just taking a look at like, if I need to read this account in 50 places and I only need to write it in once, then I can like lock it for the write and then I can open 50 threads to read it and so on and so forth. And so there's this mechanism that will go through the transaction and determine based on the format of the transaction, which is why it's a specific format, how to do that. And that's exactly right.
Interesting. Yeah, it seems like the banking stage is quite interesting. The batches of transactions. And then it goes on to the broadcast stage, which I imagine is just sending it to all validators? Or
yeah, correct. Yeah. So it makes the leader makes a block and then, you know, we'll broadcast it out to the rest of the network. And there's some complicated work there, like it gets broadcast in shreds and things like that. You know, it's kind of outside the scope of what I've been working on. But conceptually, yeah, that is what happens. It packs a block, it puts it on the chain and says, this is the block for slot, whatever. And then, you know, broadcasts it out and everybody else has to go and validate that block. And the way, like, the interesting thing about Solana is, like, you don't have to wait for a block to be confirmed for the chain to continue. Because, like, Solana leverages forks. So, like, you, and other chains probably work like this too, but you basically have, like, all of these different forks. And then as blocks are confirmed and then eventually finalized, like, the root of the forks is slid along and you end up with these, like, optimistic forks, and they eventually turn into confirmed, you know, branches of forks and stuff like that. And then there's this interesting way that the network is basically allowed to just make a block and move on. And there's like fork resolution and stuff like that that happens that will like make sure that only the confirmed blocks create the actual root, which is pretty sick, which is another reason why it's pretty fast.
So you're basically creating like multiple blocks and they're all different forks. And then if some of them aren't, did any of them drop? Like there's got to be like one main chain, right? And
yeah,
then all the other ones drop. So wouldn't it be better to just make like the most efficient block instead of multiple blocks?
Well, I don't think it's intentional. Like the way, at least that I understand it, is like if you look at something like Bitcoin, right? Like you'll make a block and like they'll go to, like it'll attempt to be confirmed and the network will sort of wait a few minutes, right, while it's being processed. Solana made the design decision instead to like, if the leader makes a block and then all the nodes that are trying to confirm that block make a different one, like let's say there's one block created, let's call it A, by the leader, and then 90% of the network makes a block B instead, and it's different than the one that the leader just made. Well, then like B is going to be the optimistic fork. Like B is going to be the one that has the most support, right? The network naturally finds its way by assuming that most of the nodes, if they can create the same block, then that's the one that, you know, makes the most sense to go with. And that's how a lot of these chains work.
So basically you build this block and you do the verification with the sig verify. Is there any more verification parts or is it just that?
Yeah, there's a lot actually. Yeah, there's, so the sig verify will ensure that your transaction is valid, right? Like you're not trying to change my wallet, you know, but to actually ensure that like you're producing a valid block, there's a lot. You have to have a proof of history hash. You have to have an accounts DB hash. There's a slot hash and a block hash. For a while, I thought those were the same thing, but apparently they're not, you know, like, so there's a lot. And basically, like, without getting into the weeds, because I, like, this is outside my expertise, but if I have some set of accounts, like, every node has an accounts database, and they're all supposed to be kept in sync by, you know, consensus. So like, if suddenly I try to say that, like, this account has a different balance than everybody else says, my hash for my account database is going to look different, right? So like that's a way to prove that I have the same state when I started creating this block as everybody else. So there's a couple different ways that it's sort of like validated along the way. And each time you have a block produced, you have to create these hashes.
Interesting. And then I'm looking at this diagram from your wonderful article here, which I'll link, but there's also a retransmit stage.
Right.
And that's, I guess that's for when a leader is assigned, is that right? You have to like transmit that to other people as well.
I have to refresh my memory on this diagram.
There's too many stages.
There really is. There's a replay
stage, and that's when the leader is verifying block after the block is built.
The replay is the other nodes that are verifying the.
Let's say if you're the validator, right, and you've built the block, so you've got to verify it yourself. So you're like building it, simulating it, and then you simulate again.
Right. Like you build a block and you move along, and then everybody else in the cluster has to replay that same batch of transactions and has to agree that they came to the same conclusion.
Is there a bottleneck in this default Solana client transaction like validation unit? It seems so many checks to build a block. There must be some, especially like when, let's say, I mean, Lucas from Jitter was saying like 50,000 transactions per second. I mean, that's a lot. When we get into something like Fireant, which is 1 million per second, you know, there's got to be some ways to at least like scan all the pending transactions you have. Because I imagine if your system is not up to par with like a high frequency trading system, then you might not be able to simulate everything. And maybe like some parts are a lot more computational heavy than others. Have you noticed any like bottlenecks within these units?
So to say that we don't have any bottlenecks is, I think, pretty absurd. You know, of course there's plenty. I think there's probably room for improvements in a lot of areas. I can't say too specifically. I think one of the things that we've learned from seeing the Firedancer guys build their client is that there's a number of ways to optimize the hardware that we have, you know, like just throwing machinery at it isn't necessarily always the best solution. Like there are ways to do it. So, you know, making better use of memory, like better use of, you know, just different implementations. And then obviously doing them with, you know, C instead of Rust, like that has its own benefits too. So there's a lot of stuff. And we've learned a lot from them so far. there's things that they've come up with that have been really clever solutions. And you know, you have to remember that, like, this is the single validator client that we've had for a few years now. It was built through like Solana's rise to popularity. And, you know, there's been, you wouldn't believe the amount of work that goes into like keeping this thing alive and running. Like, sometimes it's like funny. It's like we could use triple the engineers, you know, like, so yeah, there's totally room for improvement. And I think that will happen in the future. It's just, there's always this trade-off between like adding enhancements and keeping the network stable, right? So we got to make sure that we do a good job on both. But totally, there's definitely bottlenecks, and a lot of people could tell you about them. Hopefully we solve a lot of them in the near future.
Is there any that like a very particular that you've noticed that are really like, I guess, prominent that maybe you've, even Firedancer has attempted to solve or has solved?
So I guess there's maybe, there's a couple of things, like a couple of things that are at least hot buzzwords as far as like performance goes, is we've been looking into like direct mapping of like virtual machine accounts. That would certainly help. So like, well, basically like a lot of the bottlenecks that I could sort of identify from a runtime level, at least from what I've seen. And again, like it's by no means, like I don't know all the areas that we can improve, but there's a lot of things that have to do with like how much we copy data, and that's always like a software design problem, right? So wherever you can avoid copying and just directly reference is better. And you know, one thing that would be good, at least in that spirit, is when we provision virtual machines to execute programs, it would be a really big help if we didn't have to sort of like copy in the data from the accounts and from whatever else might be involved in your program's execution. Even your program itself, maybe like the ELF file of your program, like if we could just directly reference this to the host machine instead of copying it into the provision VM, that's one way that like performance could be increased quite a bit.
Yeah, cloning and copying in general is, it's a, I think that's the number one thing, especially in Rust, that you can optimize
exactly.
For.
Yeah, exactly. And
referencing is, yeah.
It's tricky to do because, you know, like cloning is obviously viewed widely as somewhat of an anti-pattern, usually as an anti-pattern, but it's also much safer sometimes, right? Like, especially if you're mutably borrowing data, like it's very much safer. So when it comes to like something like a virtual machine that you're provisioning, adding the data to that is going to be operated on, and then processing the result that could spit back out, it's much safer to just barf it into the VM and then just read the response and then update local machine that way. But it's worth the endeavor, right? Like it's worth going in and figuring out how to do like host to VM memory translation and figure that out. So you know, that's something that's in the works and I think will be super important. And there's other things like that that have to do with like the, like, cause we're talking about multi-threaded execution too. So improvement on something like that cascades across all threads. And then, you know, you can get threads resolved quicker and you can get more jobs out and stuff like that. So exponential, you know, room for improvement.
Yeah. It seems like the emulation and the simulation of transactions would be quite a heavy lift. I was thinking about this. It's like, oh, what if you just modify the SVM to make it more efficient in some way? I don't know. Like, I think there was some talks in Ethereum a while back, at least some things I was noticing as well. There's a lot of patterns. So let's say you start with one opcode and then it creates, it's the start of like a sequence of 20. Maybe you can just execute the entire 20 at once instead of cycling each iteration of a for loop instead. Something like that. Very minor, but like definitely gets the ball rolling of thinking of how to optimize, I guess, the emulator. Have you thought of anything like this? Of any modifications to the SVM directly to make it faster or, you know, more efficient?
Right. Well, when it comes to like, you're talking about simulating a transaction, right? So one thing that's been tossed around that I think is kind of interesting is there's been some talks about basically making the simulation, because right now the simulation is done by, it's done technically by the RPC, right? Like the RPC lives on the validator and you invoke it and tell it to send a transaction, it will do the simulate job first. It does it by, you know, the runtime is what actually will do the simulation, but the RPC tells it to. If you somehow move the simulation out of the like embedded runtime. Like if it's an RPC only thing and it can become its own standalone service, then you might have room for improvement there. Like maybe the RPC provider you're working with like doesn't need to bring the whole validator runtime with it to simulate your transaction. Like that would probably be a huge improvement. So that's one idea. And that's actually what splitting the SVM out from the validator could empower, is these like services that just run on servers that can have their own mechanisms for synchronizing with the current chain state and can just simulate transactions all day long and spit you back the result. And they don't have to create all the hashes, you know, participate in consensus, bring with all the caching that the runtime does, just worry about your transaction and be done. And that's one way that it could probably be done faster.
Another one big, I think, pitfall with the parallelization with the threads is the race conditions. Like, let's say, there's obviously spamming is a giant problem, the congestion and all that, especially in the past few days, has been really bad. There's a few games that go on, especially with MEV bots. It's, you know, you're locking someone else's accounts in a transaction, and then let's say there's a few threads going, and it just you can't access transactions similar to that because it's locked. And if you just keep spamming it, then they would never be able to access their own contract or program. So that kind of race condition. Have you seen anything similar to this?
To
the runtime.
Yeah, totally. It's definitely an issue. I mean, we tried to come up with ideas for how to solve that. There might even be suggestions for that in the scheduler. I don't know. I do not work on the scheduler, but I think that is an interesting point. And it is something that people use to spam everybody. But it's a tough problem to solve, right? Like, you could basically, maybe there's some ways that we can take a look at that with like the program caching. Like, for example, maybe you make it harder to write lock a program, which I think is already in place, to be honest with you. I don't actually totally know. But when it comes to straight up accounts, it's hard to do, you know? It's hard to sift out what is, like, you basically are talking about putting in like anti-bot like capabilities of detecting that kind of activity. And what happens if somebody's botting some account and then you're trying to actually perform a genuine transaction with it? Like, it's tricky, but you're right. It is a problem, and it's a tricky problem to solve, because if you want to have multi-threading, there's not really a whole lot of ways to do it without read-write locking.
Yeah. So it's kind of like I don't know how you would even solve that, to be honest.
Well, I'm sure it's been talked about a lot, to be honest. I'm sure it has. And I think there's some code in there that makes some attempts at it, but it's not perfect, obviously.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of tech debt in just the entire validator in general.
I mean, it's a product of like I said, like we could use triple the engineers. Like there's so much to do and there's so much that we want to do, and you wouldn't, like, the code base is complex and there's a lot going on, and you're talking about a distributed system with, you know, nodes running software on their own, and it's a very complex cutting edge setup, and it's tough. Like there is definitely tech debt, and I think it's funny because you would be surprised at the tech debt that a lot of these systems that we're all familiar with were no exception. And it's definitely tricky, but I guess it's like a fight that needs to keep getting fought.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, so speaking of the things that you would want to work on, like, you know, you're saying you want to hire, you know, a ton of engineers. What are the main kind of points you would want to work up, prioritize to make this whole system better for, you know, validators and the ecosystem in general?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that's above my pay grade. You know, like, I'm not even saying we're looking to hire anybody. It's just that the wish is, like, if we could have quadruple the engineers, you know, like, then we could maybe take some stabs at a lot of this tech debt, is what I'm saying. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, even if you do have all of these engineers and you have, you know, triple the workforce that can work on this stuff, again, like I mentioned, you have to keep the network stable too. Like, even if you have a ton of people shipping code, you have to make sure that you're not changing it too much. You know, like, mainnet beta can't change like rapidly every month. You know, like, it has to have, like, people who deploy protocols, they have to have stability and they have to have expectations that they can live by. The network isn't gonna, you know, be too unstable. And so even with all these people helping, if we were to have this hypothetical scenario, like, there's still that to contend with too. So maybe it is what it is, but, you know, I don't know. I think it's probably more important to keep it stable. there's actually probably a significant debate that could be had on that. I'm sure a lot of people would rather opt for the more unstable, but new features coming out more often. I would love to hear that debate sometime.
You mentioned in the article, Program Runtime V2, a complete redesign of the runtime environment. What does this look like? What are you aiming to do with the V2 of the runtime? What improvements, changes, modifications do you want to do and are doing currently for this?
Yeah, right. So Runtime V2 is sort of like...
And also why? Add the why there as well.
Yeah, totally. Well, the why is really the salient bit, because it's like I mentioned before, you know, we've been developing this and there's a lot of people who've been doing it longer than me that have been developing through the craziness that has been crypto. And, you know, like you said, you stack up a lot of tech debt. And so a lot of the runtime engineers noticed and have been keeping track of this tech debt in the program runtime space. So like that direct mapping thing I was talking about, that's included in there. And like there's other bottlenecks that the team believes can be solved if we just sort of redesign this whole thing from the ground up pretty much. And, you know, deploy this new environment that can execute Solana programs. And that sometimes is a good way to solve a lot of tech debt. You take it all into one big bundle and you do a redesign and you smack a bunch of it out. And, you know, with the benefit of hindsight too, it's like, okay, well, a lot of the things that we didn't really have time to fix or maybe couldn't fix or for stability reasons needed to leave untouched, like this is an opportunity to sort of take a stab at all that. So that's the why. It's a combination of solving a bunch of tech debt, but also like another, I guess, like residual side effect is hopefully, and it seems like it would be, a significant increase in like the dev experience on Solana, like a much more positive, easier way to write programs and to interact with them and interact with the chain. So that is a huge benefit too. And there was actually a presentation by some of the senior runtime guys at Breakpoint this year. So if you get a chance, anybody who's listening, check that out. It's on YouTube, I believe. I don't know what the title would be, but it's Alex and Alessandro, and they talk about what Runtime V2 is going to look like, and they show a couple of teasers, and it's a really cool demo. And that was back in late October of 2023. So yeah, super cool teaser. Check it out. Those are the guys that are designing this and going to build a lot of it.
Is that Breakpoint extending the SVM or Program Runtime V2? There it is.
Yeah, that's probably what it's called. Yeah, that makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, super cool demo. Like one of the cool things in there is like they're like turning the blockchain into basically a cargo registry. So like you're like pulling on-chain programs in from a registry of crates. And another thing too is like you're working with the instructions that the programs expose as if they're like normal functions. So it sort of feels like you're building just like any old app, you know, which is the intention. And so there's none of this like weird convoluted development where like you're dealing directly with accounts or you're like creating cross-program invocations with like macros and shit. You know, like all of that should be sort of stripped away into this like much smoother development experience. At least that's the goal.
Yeah, definitely. I always, when I go into Solana, I was very confused why you're bounded in terms of how many accounts you can interact with. I think it's like 64 or something. Is that correct?
I don't know the exact number actually, but there's a couple of reasons, and we've actually had improvements to expand that, like address lookup tables and the version transactions. But yeah, so two main reasons why you would have that issue. One is going to be the transaction size limit. So it's impossible to create a transaction with enough accounts until we had the new lookup table, which you're able to actually make them much larger now.
You put all the addresses into one account, and that one account kind of stores them all in, and you just pass that one account in.
You basically get one byte instead of 32 for the address, because the runtime can just look them up. Yeah, that helps a lot. It gets you by the transaction size limit, but yeah, there's also size limits on the virtual machine and what needs to get provisioned in there. I don't know what those limits are, but you know there is. I think if you use lookup tables though, and you write your program with just the Solana like program SDK, I think you can probably do a lot of accounts. Like, I don't know what the number is, but you can probably do a lot. If you use a framework like Anchor, I think that's where people start to hit limits a little bit quicker, because there's some like checks and stuff that they don't see happening that maybe increase some of the compute usage. And that's another thing too, like reading all the accounts in, depending what you do with them, like you're reading them all into memory and then you're operating on them, you know, you have to be careful about your compute too.
Definitely. Interesting. What about, I know like the SVM is built off eBPF, which is then converted into RBPF. Have you seen anyone make actually custom programs, which is just, you know, on Ethereum, people write in this thing called Huff, which is basically allowing you to write in basically raw hexadecimal. So you just write the opcodes, converts to the hexadecimal, and you compile it, and then you just deploy that. It's like custom bytecode, basically. Have you seen anyone actually write custom bytecode programs on Solana? I think a lot of people have the consensus of it. It doesn't actually matter how efficient your contract is because it's so cheap, but it's also, there's a lot of tools out there for Rust to be able to reverse engineer the programs of its closed source. So it would make sense to obfuscate this and use Web2 techniques. Yeah, keep in mind the InfoSec. So have you seen any of this happen? Or I feel like it's way too early in actually the ecosystem to see this. Maybe like one or two people will be doing it, but
yeah, what are your thoughts? It's definitely like the tinkerers, but I have seen it. I haven't seen people write, I guess, anything crazy like you're describing, like some custom bytecode work, but there are people who write programs in C, and there's people who do like go to like the crust of Rust and do like really crazy direct pointer manipulation instead of using like the SDK tooling. But you're right, like there's a number, like it's definitely worthwhile, even if the chain is cheap, to have optimizations in your program. I mean, you're limited to a specific number of compute usage. So like the more you can make use of that, the better. And that's a huge deal. And, you know, there's a lot of people who've gone the extra mile to do that. Like there's a guy who wrote, shout out to Caveman. He wrote a token program, like a re-implemented version of Token 22. Actually, I'm sorry, I don't remember if it was Token 22 or Token Legacy, but he rewrote the program and he added his own entry point, which uses raw pointers. He stripped away some of the abstractions that come with the Solana SDK that's written in Rust. So he was directly working with the entry point bytes on the program. I think he even was able to invoke this program with like a batch instruction processor, which is pretty impressive. And there's people like that that will roll custom implementations and do stuff like that. And I think the FireDancer guys wrote their programs in C, right? So the key is like, as long as you can get it to compile down to, you know, a shared object file, if it's a valid ELF, then, you know, it doesn't matter what you write it in.
100%. Yeah, that was the same kind of thing in Ethereum. As long as it runs, it works.
Right, yeah. As long as it runs and it can get processed, then yeah, it totally works. But yeah, no, I mean, some people, like, dude, there's always reasons to optimize your program, especially when you're paying for, well, you're not paying yet, but, you know, one day maybe you will. But if you have to pay for every different CU that you use, like that might be something to keep in mind, you know?
Definitely. Interesting. You mentioned FireDancer and a bit ago, how they were making big strides in the development and optimization of the client, and you guys learned a lot from them. What exactly did you learn from them?
Well, I mean, they've been doing things that are very complicated that I'm sort of along for the ride for a lot of the shit they're doing. But they have done things in C with their client with the benefit of being able to go through the whole stack from the beginning, right? After it's been like baking for years and do it over again. So there's a ton of ways that they've basically smushed tech debt right out and just done it the right way because they have the reference implementation to look at. So that's been like the real benefit for a lot of the stuff they've been doing. Now, additionally, though, they do spend a lot of time writing like significantly robust implementations of already well-written libraries. Like they've improved a couple of different cryptographic libraries. They've improved, you know, some of the runtime capabilities. Like they basically have been able to re-implement some of our stuff with less resources. So, you know, like I'm really excited to see whenever like they come out with sort of like their reveals and they can talk about some of the stats and the specs. There's been some of this, and I think they even talked about some of it at Breakpoint as well. But yeah, I mean, basically it's just like, it's all comes from the benefit of re-implementing an entire validator while being able to talk to like us at Anza and learn from the mistakes that people that have been around for a while have made, or the things that they wish they could have had the time and ability to go fix, you know, with that stability mandate that I was mentioning. And, you know, like they have the best opportunity right now to do that. They're writing a super low level language. They're doing everything from the ground up. They're seeing you know, good and bad about our validator. And, you know, that alone is enough room to have tons of improvements. And that's just what we've seen. And ideally, it's like they come up with different ways to do things. And then we sort of hopefully we'll try to figure out how to take some of those things that we've learned and pull them back into our client. But, you know, it's tricky to do with it being the only client right now, you know.
They do. It's very optimized in the whole entire stack. I think they're doing some hardware stuff as well.
They are, yeah. Like I said, man, they're doing a lot of stuff that is like over my head. But, you know, there's just a lot there that are really focused on this.
I wonder if they're doing like FPGA kind of stuff or designing new chips specifically for it.
You should totally look into having one of those guys on here if you get the chance. Yeah. Oh my God, they're super technical, super, super smart guys. That'd be great to have them on here.
100%. That's the people from Jump, right? They're the ones that are doing it.
Yeah,
there's some very chads. Have you, speaking on like the runtime still, have you seen like many, I guess, like exploits on Solana? When I was speaking to the Neodyme guys, Nico, it's past episode, you know, the kind of vulnerabilities you see on Solana are a lot different to EVM and things that you wouldn't even see on EVM. So I'm just wondering, like, have you seen any of these before? What are the most interesting kind of things you've seen in the TPU, transactions coming in, you know, transactions that landed, just the most interesting kind of stuff you've seen?
I can't really touch on any particular exploits that I've seen. And if I could, I probably wouldn't. As far as like what's the most interesting things I've seen in some of the source, I think one thing that sort of interests me is, I guess, how simple some things end up being. Like there's a lot of code and a lot of stuff that's happening, but at its core, like the transaction processing is actually quite simple. You know, like the instruction is basically just encoded inputs for a program. And then the account keys are in a list, right? Like it's very simple. And then it's all being used to use this library, this open source library, to provision a virtual machine. And like, it seems so much more complicated and it is definitely not simple, but conceptually, I was surprised at how understandable and digestible it really was when you sort of like get the chance to go through it all. Yeah. And another thing too, like that I found was interesting is, I guess sort of like how I was really into some of the virtual machine stuff that I started learning only recently too, like just in the last few months. I think it's pretty cool how these VMs are set up and how the guys that wrote some of like the changes we've made to that eBPF. There's a Solana RBPF crate, and that's a fork of the open source eBPF crate. I forget the name of it, but it might just be called RBPF. I'm not really sure. And there's some minor modifications in there, but basically we've just sort of like imposed the Solana like transaction format standard on the VM. So like there's like this entry point to the VM that corresponds to the instructions that are being put into a transaction. And then the linkage is very clear there. And seeing that whole like pipeline come together, I thought was super interesting, and seeing how it works. And then understanding how like a node, like a host validator machine, and basically spin up all of these VMs super fast in parallel. You know, they're very like,
yeah,
totally. And that's what I thought was cool too. Like I didn't realize, you know, like for anybody who's ever worked with virtual machines, at least in the past few years, like it's gotten a lot better, but sometimes it can be like, it seems like a lot, like a resource intensive thing to do. Like it's always usually, there's a lot of resources involved in creating a VM, either on your machine or like working with one remotely. And like I said, this is probably a lot better now, but at least the stuff that I used to see years ago was, it was just funny to think that that could be spun up and executed and then torn down in a multi-threaded environment really, really fast. Like that was kind of cool to see. And it's this toolkit that really does it. These VMs are highly optimized.
I imagine that like, if you're, it's constantly spinning up and spinning down for each new transaction.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make sense to have each thread spinning, depending in transactions being processed?
It's each instruction that it spins up a VM for. So shit.
Oh, that's damn, that sounds like a, damn, yeah, that sounds really inefficient actually.
Yeah, like, the thing about that though is like this library is very robust in its ability to sort of like map the VM resources efficiently and quickly from the host and just give you what you need to execute this program. Like it's all very low level code and it works you know, it's pretty high performant, and we have just a small set of things that get provisioned into it every time it's instantiated. Those things I was telling you about that we copy in. You provision a host, you provision a heap, you provision a stack, and you copy the accounts in, and then you go to town, and then it's over.
Couldn't you just rewrite the existing ones instead of spinning up and down each time?
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking too, but it's kind of interesting because they're not really provisioned and spun up the way that you and I might think of VMs as, like, I'm going to shell into this box and I'm going to like do some stuff in an interactive terminal, right? Like, it's sort of like a flattened VM instance. Like, it's designed to be an execution flow. Like, it's a VM designed for a single program to run on with a very like specific set of resources and like a constrained environment with only the things you tell it to be exposed to. And it's designed to be like input output done. So for those reasons, it has like all the optimizations you need to not have to like spool up all these resources and provision like a hypervisor layer and stuff like you might have seen on like some of these host machines. Like, I used to work a lot with WSL, and that was like what I had in mind. And I was like, okay, this is not at all the same thing, like very naively.
Yeah, because what I was thinking is like, oh, okay, you can have a cache of the initial state, and then if you run an instruction, you just mark what things you're changing and go back to the cache and just replace it instead of spinning it all up and down again.
That is a good point. And that's one of the like goals in runtime V2 is to sort of provision less. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a goal. Like, one idea was to sort of like use one VM per transaction. You could go so far as try to use one VM per batch, but I don't know how far we've sort of gone. Yeah.
Instead of like one VM per instruction is right. That sounds like a lot of fucking VMs.
I mean, dude, you couple like less VMs with the ability to like directly reference the data and not copy it, you're talking about a significant performance increase, like a pretty robust one, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, I think the batches one would be very interesting, especially when we're going to like, you know, the millions of transactions. Like, let's say each transaction has a minimum of, I don't know, or five. It's every single instruction plus the inner instructions as well.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so when you CPI to another program, it has to do the same process. It has to provision a VM.
So it's doing every single one, but wouldn't the state be changed when it's going from instruction 0 to like instruction 2? Like, yeah. There's a lot of state changes. So it must be recording that, then spinning yep. down, then spinning up, then putting that state back in.
Exactly right. It's called a syscall. And basically what happens is like when you invoke at the zero layer, the program, the response you get from the zero layer program is the one that goes back for the instruction processing, right? Like instruction 0, that gets to my program. And when my program finishes, the results come back. When the program itself goes to another program through CPI, it's going to make a syscall, which will basically pause the execution of its current VM. Go tell the host to provision a new one and do the same thing in like a sub task, a sub process. And then you're right. Exactly right. Update that result with the result of that VM execution and then come back to the executing program and continue to operate on it. And then the aggregate response of all of those like sub processes are in the response of like your layer 0, if that makes sense.
Why is it spinning up a new VM instead of going the single VM? I don't understand that. Like,
because yeah. That's the way that these VMs are designed. Like, they're designed for a single program to just be executed across, you know? Like, it doesn't
But that's an instruction. Like, instead of spinning up for each new instruction, it could just keep the same VM and execute the instruction on that VM and see if it fails. If it fails, just revert. But, like, why is it spinning right. up? Or is that just, like, a design flaw, basically?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. Like, one, you know, we would have to change the mapping of the data in these VMs, right? Like, we'd have to be able to allow for more than one program to be mapped into it. Right now, that's obviously not the case. Like, there's an address space for like stack, heap, program, and inputs. So we just have those four right now. And we would need to figure out how to add more. Like, do we need separate stacks and heaps for each program? Like, we probably need a separate address space for each of those. We probably need to duplicate all four for every program that gets put in there. And then, you know, what's the limit and things like that. And I'm not really sure why we haven't explored that yet. I'm sure these guys have been looking at it for a while. Like the guys who did the demo at Breakpoint and stuff.
Yeah, 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 definitely.
I'm sure that they have been looking at it. And it's part of the runtime V2 you know, idea at least. But you're totally right. There's definitely ways that you could do that. And like I said, the idea of putting one VM on one transaction, I think, is rooted in that philosophy of like, okay, how much can we push this thing? And can we just keep it, you know, basically keep it active with all the resources provisioned in it and just invoke it until the transaction's done? And maybe you can. It definitely could.
But yeah, I guess it comes back to the same thing. It's like, oh, there's a lot to be done, not enough hands on deck. And you got to kind of prioritize. I wonder what the prioritization is right now, if this isn't it.
Basically, our priority right now is just maximum stability, man. Like, we want to make sure the network is solid. And that's...
That makes sense, yeah. Don't want to do, like, experimental break everything. Changes.
Yeah, you can't. It's got to stay stable, and people have to be able to trust that it's going to stay up.
That makes sense.
I mean, the nice thing about Runtime V2 is it's the rollout plan has been to sort of like you can't just get rid of the original runtime because like everybody's stuff would be like no longer
failing. It just doesn't.
Like, you just can't, right? So the idea that they've been floating around and that was talked about before is like, we would introduce a new environment and, you know, it would be like an opt-in thing and you'd have all these benefits of moving to the new environment. But those who don't, like, the two would basically live alongside each other. So when you do things like that, you can keep things relatively stable. And it also gives you the opportunity to make some pretty drastic changes, but not everything can be done like that. You know, like some things need to get changed in place. Like that can be a little bit sketchy. Like we want to try to simplify some of our components and make it easier for FireDancer and like some of the other people who might build clients in the future. Like we want to see more validator clients, but there's a lot of code to replicate, right? So like if we can simplify some of these components, that's a major benefit. So we've been doing a lot of work there.
Especially making them more modular. I heard FireDance is a lot more modular.
Yeah, they've taken an approach to making their client modular, and I think that's the right idea. And I think we should too. It's hard to do because it's a lot of refactoring. But that was why, like, I made a tweet about this the other day, and I think that was when you reached out to me about this, was I was mentioning what it might look like to make the SVM very modular and, like, all the lower-level components, like the VM that we're talking about, all of these, like, very decoupled pieces. And I think we have a really good opportunity to do that there because it's actually one of the lesser tied-up, coupled pieces of the validator, right? It's a great place to start, I think, if we want to move in that direction.
I think it's very easy to actually create a VM. Like I made an emulator for the EVM in quite a short amount of time.
So, oh yeah, it's not difficult to do. It's the library itself that we've forked is awesome. It doesn't look like we've added a whole lot. I really don't know though. Somebody might pull me and be like, "We've worked on this for years.
Spent my whole life on this."
Yeah, right. Like how do you? But it is like relatively straightforward, right? It's like give me what address space you want to have what in it, and I will give you an environment to execute an x86 program on. And it's like, that's all you really need to care about. We do a lot of stuff with like just-in-time compilation and like caching to optimize the runtime even further. That's like the program runtime aspect of things.
Yeah, I think caching is probably like the major thing you could definitely do. Like copying data over and over again is probably the largest bottleneck and the easiest like low-hanging fruit. Maybe not easiest, but like the most performant. And then you can get into like more the algorithm stuff. At least that's what I'm getting a sense of now with my model of this.
No, that's true. I think the caching works quite well though. Like I wouldn't necessarily say it's a bottleneck. It's just a difficult thing to get right. Like you're talking about just-in-time compilation caching across multi-threads. It's tricky to do, you know? It's like, how does
anything multi-threaded is hard.
Yeah, but I think it works quite well. I mean, you can see the effects of it. I think it's not anything particularly new. I don't know exactly when we started doing that, but, you know, there's a couple of dudes that work on it that, like, it's been a long time in the making, but it's been live for quite a while. And that's how, like, Solana works with a lot of these program compilations. It really will cache it all, and it will recompile it every so often. It depends on how often your program's invoked. Like if you're a program that gets used a lot, like you might get compiled less.
If it's like a major one, like a program that just is always used, like keep loading it.
Right. Exactly. It just caches it up, and then until it's changed, it doesn't need to recompile it. But it also does it at the halfway point of every epoch.
I'm actually curious because one big tool that kind of changed and like blew up the development experience on Ethereum was something called Foundry. And there was like a predecessor to this, but everyone kind of knew it, or Foundry. And it was called DappTools, was the predecessor. But then it got converted into Foundry, and then Reef came out, and REVM. Basically what it is, there's this feature that allows you to fork the current state of the network. And basically how it works is when you are trying to test something, test a contract, and you deploy, or you're using something off mainnet, and you want to use a specific state, it's like a slot, it would actually like load that into a cache, and then you can modify it, and when you're done, it just clears it back to default or what was originally there, and this allows you to actually test on mainnet. And I think there's nothing like this on Solana. I think it was because there's so many accounts to actually interact with. I think you could do it, actually.
Yeah, you can.
It doesn't seem that difficult, but I don't think anyone's done it, though. Or maybe I've just not seen the entire ecosystem, the tool chain.
There's some actually pretty good tooling around what you're describing. So, like, I don't know if it goes to the extent that maybe Foundry's tool does, but like for starters, there's a Solana test validator, and that thing is designed to be a single node cluster. And whatever version you're running, if you run the same version as mainnet, you have the same software. And what you can do is you can actually clone down accounts and programs from mainnet or testnet or and so you can. Dude, like you can do a lot. You can clone the stuff down. You can do a different slot. You can simulate all the different like on-chain data, like sysbars. And then there's tools that have come out that have wrapped that to make it a little bit easier to work with from like, let's say like you're testing in JavaScript or something like that. So there's some really good tools. Yeah, I would say that's like, without knowing the extent of the Foundry tooling, I would say that it sounds pretty similar to, there's a lot of from Metaplex. There's a guy, shout out Thorsten, he's built a lot of awesome tools around that too. My colleague Loris, like there's a lot of cool tools around the local validator that have come out. Sorry if I'm forgetting anybody. There's a couple of guys out there.
They're just screaming in the background like, oh man, he's dead to me now.
Yeah, there's a lot. But yeah, the test validator itself has been awesome. And like, that was one thing we struggled with when I was at Foundation, was like we were trying to get more people to use the test validator, because like so many people, especially those who come from like an enterprise background, like enterprise development, they'll just go to DevNet, you know, and like they'll just go deploy their thing and like test around with it. And it's like, yeah, you can get an airdrop and like you can do some stuff on DevNet, but like it's much easier to test on a test validator that's local to your box, that you get like a billion SOL. And you can just go to town. And so like introducing people to that concept was always like a big eye opener, because they were like, oh my God, this is way better. Like it's faster. I don't have to deal with like rate limits.
Definitely. And yeah. So with
Agave.
Fuck. Yes. with that, what were like the challenges of actually changing like the runtime? I assumed you changed it, but just modifying the client in general. What were kind of the challenges you faced, and how did you overcome them, or how did you not overcome them?
Well, good question. So from my perspective, like the changes I've been making lately, like I mentioned that we're trying to simplify the runtime, and what we're trying to actually do is get rid of as many of our built-in programs as we can. And I'm the lucky duck that got that job. So when things break, you know who to call, I guess now. I'm going to be the guy. But anyways, so like making those changes has been like, that's been a pretty direct change that needs to be made. Like that you need to give the runtime the capability to evict these programs and replace them with on-chain programs, which that doesn't exist, or it hasn't before. It will now, in hopefully a few days, but ideally like that's been a significant change. And then like, you know, once these programs come out, you can start to drop some of this code from the code base. From to answer your question, like the experience is kind of what you'd expect, right? Like there's a lot of really, really smart people that work here that are very attentive to this code. And so like, you've got to go in and do your research. Like you, when you work on stuff that's live, like it's like any production environment, like people are going to make sure it's tip top. And so it's been pleasant, but it's also been pushing me to learn exactly how all of it works, right? And like, I wrote that paper you mentioned because I really needed to like fully understand how everything worked before I tried to introduce the changes. Otherwise, like, you know, it's good luck, buddy, you know, like, so that's been good. And it's good to see. It's always good to see that there's a ton of smart people who really do care. And just like I said, it's as you would expect, like pretty good rigorous review and definitely want the best code going in there.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's a really big fucking repo. There's a lot going on. The only way to really understand is to just write about it yourself. Like, writing articles is phenomenal in fully grasping. Because if you can't teach it to someone else, you don't really know it. And that's articles do. It's like condensing your thoughts.
It's my entire intention. Like, exactly what you said. Like,
I did the same thing.
I saw your list that you sent me earlier. Really, like, going through the code, I was like, the only way I can actually grok what I'm looking at fully is to, like, try to put it in a paper where I could, like, explain it. And yeah, that's exactly how it went.
And it works. It works really well.
It totally works. It really does. And, like, you find the gaps when you do that, you know? And sometimes you'll be like, all right, well, it's not something I need to know, but, like, I guess I can't, like, leave this paper. I
should know it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that is a super good exercise to do. And, like, a lot of people really interested, like, were interested in that particular subject. And it was great to have the support from a lot of the people who read it and were pleased to see such, you know, content. So who knows? I think I might try to, you know, do some more of those in the near future.
Yeah, definitely. I think it also, like, highlights what you don't know. So then you can, like, go hammer into those parts. But I 100% agree. It's definitely, like, a holy grail if you want to, like, accelerate learning. That's for a lot, like, a final question. Where do you see Solana going in the coming 6 months? The short term, long term, I guess, with runtime, the stuff you're doing, but also just in general. Where do you see the entire ecosystem going and whatnot?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So there's a lot of aspects to, like, an answer for that, right? Like, from, like, a technical, like, core development perspective, I think if you just go through, like, the SIMDs and you go through, like, some of the stuff that people have been talking about in Discord, there's a lot of really interesting developments that are basically either in the pipeline or being actively, like, talked about and discussed. So I think by the time, like, let's say 6 months from now, that'd be what, October, you know, like, there's only so much we can ship in 6 months. But I think you'll see some interesting changes go into, like, future releases that would be sort of planned for the future. Like, we'll have interesting problems to solve. Like, there's obviously problems that need to be solved now that, you know, myself and my colleagues are actively working on solving. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, you know, related, et cetera. So, like, we'll hopefully see a lot of those mistakes corrected and things that have come from that as, like, more improvements to the network. And then I think there's a lot of interesting ideas that, like, I mentioned the stuff from FireDancer, like, things that we learn from them that can get sort of moved in our direction too. And, you know, further along from that, I think it'd be interesting to see, I mean, I don't know when they're shooting for their mainnet launch, FireDancer, but, you know, I would love to see us getting closer and closer to having more validator clients. It's such a big deal. It really is. It would be so cool to see that coming to fruition. And, you know, they're working super hard, so I'm sure it's coming soon, but I don't know when. I would not say 6 months. I'm not going to even try to guess, but, you know, to at least see the progress being made, like, we've already seen, that's going to be really cool to see and to keep seeing what they're sharing and talking about.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's
been a multi-year endeavor, FireDancer.
Exactly. And those guys share a lot on Twitter and stuff. Like, if you want to follow some of them, they're really cool dudes. But so, yeah, a lot of that, like, I think a lot of technical advances will happen. Like, there's been a lot of focus over the last few years, even. Like, I think there's always advancements coming out. There's cool stuff. It's being talked about in SIMDs all the time. Like, different rewards-oriented stuff, you know, stuff that has to do with, like, block propagation, like, whatever you're into, you know, like, there's cool stuff being talked about. So to see some of those move along the whole, like, SIMD process would be sweet. I think as an ecosystem, though, like, I don't know, everything seems strong, man. Like, everything seems really strong. I have a lot of friends in this ecosystem that are doing really well and have been here for a while, taught me a lot, and I think they're just going to keep on keeping on doing the good fight. And I think a lot of these projects that they've been working on, I hope are going to continue to do well. And we're going to have a really fun, like, end of this year, 6 months from now. I really do. I think there's just enough people that have been committed that are still hanging around. And I don't know, no place I'd rather be right now, to be honest with you.
Real. Yeah. It's like Ethereum before everything, like, everyone's building before it, like, blows up and it gets its big break, I think. I mean, it's already doing insane volumes, and it's actually surpassed Ethereum in sometimes. I remember historically, it was this quite recently, it broke more volume than Ethereum, which is insane to think of.
To be honest with you, like, I don't get into the whole, like, I don't pay too much attention to some of those stats, and not for anything. It's just like, I don't know. I don't have anything against other chains. Like, I think Ethereum has done a lot of innovation that other chains, including us, have benefited greatly from. You know, like, there's no reason to sort of like point any fingers at anybody. So I've never really done the comparison thing. I think it's the strongest ecosystem, the largest. So it's always good to use it as a benchmark. But for me, like, we were chatting about this before the podcast even started. Like, I just sort of like got into Solana as like one of my first crypto like ecosystem to get involved in. And there was just like absolutely really no reason to leave. You know, it's just like a lot of awesome builders, like super smart people, like really cool vibes. And maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. But the builders have been here, man, and they're legit. They're smart, smart people. And I don't know. It's just funny, like, when I first, and I'm sure like other ecosystems are totally like this too, but it's like getting into it, like, people are like on Twitter talking about like serialization and like bytes and like all this crazy like low level stuff, and I'm like, oh my god, like, what did I get myself into here? And it's just like so funny though, because like you find yourself pretty roped in pretty quick. But no, I think everything's going well. I really think we're in a good spot, and I think everybody's got a good mindset right now, and you know, there's a lot of fun stuff happening in the community, I think.
Definitely. Well, I'm super keen to see, hopefully soon, the runtime V2. And when that happens, best believe you're coming back on by force.
Yeah, happy to come back on. I'm happy to come back on again when we have some more SVM stuff as well. I think that'd be great.
Always love the TPU, SVM stuff. Runtime, yeah. give me all of it.
Yeah, I mean, anybody, just as like a quick shout out here, like anybody who's like looking to build on SVM or build SVM related projects, like, definitely hit me up. I would love to hear about what you're trying to do and understand like how best we can sort of like position the SVM effort that we have here to sort of like definitely bring that about.
100%. So, but man, Joe, thank you so much for sharing the wealth of knowledge. I really appreciate it. I have learned a lot from this. I guarantee a lot of people will as well. Thank you so much for taking the time, and we'll definitely have you on soon, hopefully, when Runtime V2 comes out.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. I really enjoyed chatting.
Of course. Pleasure's all mine, sir. Until next time, GN.
See you later.